Hey, welcome back to the Football Diary podcast. Thanks for joining us. And there's pressure building on a couple of managers in the Premier League, as if it's not been bad enough so far with the amount of sackings we've had. But two managers under the microscope at the moment, under real scrutiny, David Moyes at West Ham, who have now slipped into the relegation zone. And of course, Graham Potter at Chelsea. Both of those we'll be discussing on this week's pod and what chances they've got of actually turning around their fortunes, if they can at all. Also, the title race took another turn, or did it, as Arsenal lost to Man City in their midweek game. But then Man City went to lose points against Forest in their game this weekend. So not much has changed, really, in the grand scheme of things. But we've certainly learned a fair bit about Arsenal. So I've got Dave with me as well to discuss that as well. Dave, we'll start with the managerial pressure that's building, especially under David Moyes, I think, at West Ham. Because we've always said in this decline they've had this season that they're going to turn it around. They've got the right players to do that. The performances so far have just not improved, have they? David Moyes is under pressure. He's been given a war chest of money to spend, but they've not changed anything, have they? They've actually got worse this season. What's going on, man? What's the difference there for Moyes this season? Do you think he'll ride it out?
Oh, it's a tough question to answer that. I don't think it's about them. I don't think there's a chance of them getting relegated. I know they've been, you know, very inconsistent this season. They've particularly had troubles in front of goal, not scoring enough goals. The likes of Jared Bowen has kind of gone missing a lot at times throughout the season. And there's certain players who are just out of form, out of sorts. I think it's more about them underachieving. And that's the main thing for me. I don't think they will go down, but I think it's a possibility that he goes, because how they're playing at the minute, and they're just so inconsistent that it's just how long this goes on for. And I'm sure the West Ham board will not want to be in this position. They'll not want to be in Leeds' position, where they're kind of left with the pick of very few managers that are out there. They'll want to act sooner rather than later. They'll probably be looking at what Everton have done and how Everton have responded over this last couple of weeks. They'll definitely want a similar reaction.
It's a strange time of the season, isn't it, to start firing managers? And that's the kind of question they've got to ask themselves as a board, West Ham, because the record recently has been terrible. Like, there's been no chance, no time for them to turn it around, really, from any run of results being put together. And I think they've lost four out of the last nine games since the restart from the World Cup. It's horrendous form. It's relegation form, isn't it? And I think the form table since December reflects that. They're right near the bottom of it, near Liverpool, funnily enough. So it's not been a great 2023 for West Ham so far. At what point do the board go, enough is enough? Because they've got Forest this weekend. That's massive, isn't it? If they lose to Forest, they're looking in deep trouble. If they win against Forest, not a lot of changes there either. So what do we wait? Do we give him that game? Do the board go, yeah, let's see how you're getting against Forest, and if you get a result, we'll try and see if you turn it around from there. I don't know what it's going to take for them to actually pull the trigger on him.
Well, I think they've been waiting for a reaction, a response, haven't they, from the team, and they've been expecting it. I mean, we saw them draw against Newcastle, was it a couple of weeks ago? And you thought, okay, you know, they conceded very early on in that game, and well, twice, didn't they? There was a disallowed goal, and the way they conceded that goal was very unlike a West Ham team anyway. You always look at West Ham as being hard to beat, defensively sound, and well, a good structure at the back, and that's been sort of anything but of late. And yeah, you kind of thought that would be a turning point, but obviously they've gone on since then, and it's just been inconsistent all over again. Just like I mentioned, they just don't look threatening at all going forward, do they? I was watching the Tottenham game yesterday, and it was just such a dire watch. And it's, we're just wondering where that West Ham have gone from last season, really.
Yeah. There's so many players dropped off, isn't there?
Yeah, and it's really hard to pick apart because I think there's a lot of things that are wrong at the minute. Obviously, the loss of Mark Noble from that sort of squad as well, and the atmosphere. We spoke about it a few weeks ago, didn't we? I think he was a big character to have in there, and he'd sort of piece them together, hold them together. And you've got to wonder sort of what the dressing room is like, really, because what character they've got. Declan Rice, he came out yesterday and said, you know, the way we're playing, it's not good enough. And wish, you know, when I think the interviewer asked why they're not scoring enough goals, he didn't really have an answer for it. He just said, well, that's football, you know. It's that, for me, that's very vague. He doesn't seem to know what the answers are. He does know what the answers are, and you know, you're not going to talk in public about it. David Moyes seems dumbfounded, you know, the way he's come out, and with his response in his post-match interview as well, it was kind of, he really is like a hare in the headlights, isn't he?
I think the West Ham of old, like you were saying, when you say of old, it wasn't that long ago. Like the last two seasons, really, they've kind of flirted with top four, and they were in and out of the top four on many occasions, weren't they, in the sort of final third of the season, and obviously didn't have enough to sustain it because their squad was always quite small. It's not really the case anymore. Their squad's been improved by some brilliant players. What's changed in their play, though?
It shouldn't take for them to be threatened by relegation for them to make a managerial change. Like, this is not good enough now for West Ham. They're obviously a big club with a massive fan base.
Yeah.
And from what they've done in the last couple of seasons, it really should be that they've been kicking on now. Like you mentioned, they've made some really sound investments in recruitment, and it's just not worked out. And it appears, it just looks to me, I just don't think the manager is the right fit. Going forward, they're too defensive for me. They look to kind of sit back, even when they had one shot on target yesterday.
Yeah, it's horrendous. That's the thing. They've got no creativity and no like enterprise anymore. And that's that's something we associate with West Ham of the last two seasons. It's just attacking verb, and it's just missing, isn't it?
You look at the likes, obviously, Antonio had a brilliant season a couple of years ago, didn't he? He provided them with, you know, a lot going forward. This season, he looks off it as well. I think there's a bit of animosity going on in background there, because he was denied a deadline day move, wasn't he? I think he was linked with going back to Forest.
Yeah, true.
I just think it doesn't seem to be a happy squad for me at the minute.
I feel like David Moyes has got his ceiling, though. That's the thing. And he's always thrived when he's got a squad that is settled and there isn't a huge amount of change. And I think the last two seasons, if we've seen West Ham come to that level where it's a squad that he's built, it's players that he trusts. And this season, they've tried to be ambitious and sign players that are, I don't know, going to raise the level of West Ham's play, to raise the calibre of players they're signing, which they are. But I don't think he's comfortable with managing that kind of expectation. I really don't. He did it to Everton. Obviously, he took on Manchester United and was saying that we were underdogs against Liverpool and things like that. And we were like, you can't say that publicly, you know? So I do honestly feel like David Moyes is a great guy and a great record in the Premier League, but I don't think he's the guy that any team should turn to take them into the top four.
No, I fully agree. I think, like you mentioned there, he's got a limit to his sort of managerial capabilities. And yeah, it's all coming apart at the minute. And like I say, it shouldn't take for West Ham to be threatened with relegation to then be like, oh, well, maybe we need to make a change now. They should be comfortably in the top half of the table.
All right, then when would you have turned it around then as a West Ham board? Would you have said, okay, we've gone consistently below 10th in the table, now's the time?
I think you just have to look at the way they're playing, though. You don't even have to look at the table. If you went to each game of the last, you know, five matches, and you can see a recurring trend, you know, the players aren't performing, there's a lack of goals, and, you know, it's not an easy watch for West Ham fans at all. It's not just the results, it's the way they're playing.
It's a team that's unrecognisable from last season, isn't it, really? And sad in some ways, because I think we were celebrating the fact that West Ham could break that sort of stronghold on the top six. And I definitely had them in top eight this season, didn't you?
Yeah, I didn't think they'd drop below, you know, the bottom half. I thought they'd be around mid-table. But you look at you look at last season and how well some of the teams did do. I didn't see for instance, the likes of Fulham. I thought they would have finished above Fulham. I thought Fulham would have come up and struggled again, but they've proved us all wrong. I thought they'd be in amongst and around Brighton and Brentford, to be honest, who've obviously done very well. So, again, we're thrown with surprises left, right and centre in this league, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, it's the value of a settled squad, isn't it? And I think that's where the likes of Brighton, Brentford, Fulham are kind of showing what value that has. And this West Ham squad has been unsettled slightly with the sort of incoming players. And I don't think David Moyes quite knows what to do with this squad that he's got and the expectation on him now. So we've seen a struggle and unravel, really, and it's kind of sad. I think there's a very real chance of West Ham getting relegated, I'll be honest. But we'll see how it pans out. It's tight at the bottom, that's the thing. I think from 14th down to the bottom of the table, there's not enough points really separating them to make me feel that anyone's safe who's in that position, really. So, yeah, we'll see. And another team that are really underperforming this season is obviously Chelsea as well. And we've spoken about Chelsea in depth in the past. And I remember when Thomas Tuchel took over, he absolutely transformed the club, didn't he? He won the Champions League with them in a very short space of time. And how that's turned around so quickly to where they are now, you know, in what, 10th in the table. They've won one game in 2023. It's a terrible record for Graham Potter. He's now got the worst record of any Chelsea manager in the Premier League era. And it's tough to see how he's going to turn that around. And I think if you listen to Chelsea fans as well, most of them want him to go because they don't understand why he's had as much patience as he has had so far from the board. If this was Abramovich, he wouldn't still be in a job. So why would you lose an elite manager like Thomas Tuchel? Give Graham Potter as much control as he's got. Let these results happen and see where it takes you. Do you trust the process for Chelsea, Dave?
I think it's hard to, isn't it?
That's what we're hearing, isn't it? Trust the process. Look at Arteta. It's not the same though, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot today on social media. There's a lot of positive spin going on. From what I've seen, the Chelsea's PR representatives have been busy at work. So, it's worrying times, actually, isn't it? But do you know what actually really surprises me still? As bad as Chelsea have been, they're only 11 points off fourth with a game in hand.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's more of an indictment of how poor the middle of the Premier League's been, really, isn't it? But they're in amongst it. They're bang in the middle of those mediocre teams. And it's the drop-off from being European champions to where they are now that's scary, really. With the investment they've had, it should be so much better. I mean, don't get me wrong. You might fast forward a year and we'll look back at this and go, can you remember when we were genuinely concerned about Chelsea and look at what's happened to them now? They might have all these young, vibrant players turning it around, but they've looked toothless in every game since the restart, definitely, in 2023. And it's no surprise they have only won that one game. So just a centre forward missing, isn't it?
There's this mythical new manager bounce. They've never had a new manager bounce he's arrived at the club. So I don't know. It's hard to say whether he's the right fit for the club or not. Well, I just think it was the wrong time for him to take this job. And it's all coming out now saying he needed time, he needed a pre-season. Come on, honestly.
Do you remember, though, when Arteta was struggling, though? And people were saying give it time because they could see potential in Arteta. And it was genuinely Arsenal fans calling for Graham Potter, who was then the Brighton manager, to take over at Arsenal. So, and times have changed. The perception of Potter has changed. And I think for me, that's a real shame because he's a great coach.
Look at the players he's got available to him, Mike.
I know,
Look at that Arsenal squad when Arteta was there. And you look at Chelsea's squad that he's got available to him. There's some, you know, world-class talents in that squad.
It's too much too soon, though.
They can't beat the bottom team of the Premier League.
It's too much too soon. The change that he's expecting to oversee is a job that's too big for him. And I genuinely think that's the case. And I think Tuchel would have been able to manage that many different characters better. I'm guessing there was a clash that was beyond repair between Tuchel and Todd Boehly as well, because why you'd let an elite coach like him go is crazy. We didn't have him anywhere close to being sacked this season, did we, at the start, let alone the first person to be sacked from his position. But Potter it is. They're putting a lot of faith in him, aren't they? Like you say, the PR machine's gone into overdrive to try and make him seem like the option that they should stick with and trust. But again, at what point do Chelsea go, we can't keep letting this happen? The slide is too great now. Let's change the position again. Let's get a new manager in.
I think it'll take for them to go out of the Champions League. That might be all it takes for them to not beat Dortmund. And he gets sacked because I mean, there's a lot of things coming out saying he's been backed, but I've seen things that suggest he's maybe not as safe as people are saying he is. It could take them to go out of the Champions League. Again, look at the position Liverpool have put themselves in with a couple of wins in the league. If Chelsea went on win two or three games, they're right back in it amongst it. But with the way they're playing at the minute, can you see that happening? I don't know.
They lose 1-0 to bottom of the table Southampton. And I genuinely get a feeling that they thought that was almost a given, that result. And it took a James Ward-Prowse free kick to separate the two teams. But it shouldn't have been the case, should it? It should have been a clear, easy victory for a Chelsea team that obviously on paper is a class apart from Southampton. And Southampton are with no permanent coach either. So they should have been a team that they should have sort of really thrashed almost, I would say. It should have been a team that should have been practice for them at scoring. And they need practice at scoring because they can't get the ball in the net either.
I mean, is that a coincidence that Brighton couldn't buy a goal last season and Graham Potter's left? De Zerbi's gone there. They're bagging left, right and centre. Yeah. And Potter's now at Chelsea and they can't buy a goal. Is that just something
he has as a flaw of his, like a blind spot in his management then, where he can't coach forwards or he doesn't play with an out-and-out centre-forward because he never has at Brighton either. Neil Maupay was the closest they got to a goal scorer and he didn't score many at all, did he?
No. And that's... I really am dumbfounded by it, to be honest. I don't think that it could be a coincidence, but it's the way that Chelsea... Look, they did have quite a few chances in the second half against Southampton. And it's been the theme. It was the same against West Ham as well. They probably should have won that game. But like you mentioned, you've got to put the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, and they started David Fofana this time. And he's only 20 years old. And obviously, they've got high hopes for him. He's not really got any football experience at this level, has he? They took him off at half-time and you think to yourself, you've got Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang as well, who's not getting a look in either. And you make sure
he's not been in the four match day squads, I don't think.
Well, he's not in the Champions League
squad. And he's not in the Champions League squad either.
And it does make you wonder what he's done to annoy Potter, because he's been there a few minutes and he's kind of excluding him already. He just doesn't rate him as a forward, clearly, but... You'd think if you're struggling to score goals, you'd at least put a well-renowned goal scorer on your team, you know?
That's another thing, isn't it? You've got Bowley, who's come in and brought all these players in, Aubameyang being one of them, and you've then got your manager, who you've brought in yourself, who's saying, no, he's not good enough. He's not cutting it. There must be a lot of kind of contradiction, I feel like, going on, sort of... some of these decisions that are being made, it's a bit of a mess, really, from top to bottom. And you've got to be feeling sort of misguided as a Chelsea fan at the minute. You're kind of being led astray, and you don't really actually know what's actually going on with their team or their club. What the actual problem is? It's hard to kind of figure out that. Obviously, the performances are obviously not good enough. But again, it's whether they actually follow through and keep Potter there. And I'll be very surprised if they do, to be honest. I don't think he'll last another month if they keep playing the way they do.
It's interesting, though, that you mentioned Champions League being the thing that might tip it over for them. I agree. I think once that cash cow isn't there anymore and they're going to get not even European competition at all at the moment, they're not looking close to sort of getting to that level at the moment. I can't see how you can stick with the formula. They need they need cash coming in to pay for these contracts they've shelled out. I think the only way they can hit financial fair play is if they get that Champions League money coming in. I think they've based their whole model on that being the case, to pay for the contracts they've got that are lasting, 6, 7, 8 years in many cases. So if they don't get that kind of revenue, they're going to struggle. We might see a mass exodus at Chelsea if that is the case, though, to be fair.
It can't go on for much longer. If they want Champions League, they go out of the Champions League. I think he'll be either relying on winning the Champions League, which, let's be honest, it's very unlikely at the minute with how they're playing. And if they get knocked out, and then if they lose another game or two, I think he'll be gone. I don't think he'll be there.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks bleak for Chelsea really at the minute, and far cry from when they were challenging for honours really. It wasn't that long ago. But at the top of the Premier League, a different picture really. Arsenal are still at the top, although the gap has closed. They lost to Manchester City midweek, quite convincingly 3-1. We learned a fair bit about them from that game, which we'll talk about in a moment. But then Man City proceeded to lose points against Nottingham Forest, although they did really push for a goal to win the game, but that finished 1-1. And Arsenal bounced back with a quite impressive 4-2 win against Aston Villa as well. So the title race, no one seems to want to take the initiative and stretch ahead even further, do they? So it makes for great neutral viewing. But what have we learned about Arsenal, Dave, after their setback against City, first of all, and then the way they came back against Villa 4-2 in this weekend's games?
I think it took a lot of character, the way they came back in this game. I thought Villa, in moments, played really well. I thought in moments, Villa were their own worst enemy, yeah, as we've heard on the pod of the last few weeks. But Arsenal, I think, to get that equaliser, I thought that was a brilliant goal. Like, you know, just the way he took the goal. But also, we did see Arsenal's Achilles heel at times in this game. I think Saliba's not been quite the player he was at the beginning of the season. He had a couple of lapses in concentration. I think Watkins does him too easily on that first goal. It's just too easy. And knowing that somebody's left-footed as well and is going to take it on, wants to get it on their left foot, I just thought that was a little bit lazy.
Do you think that's what it is then on his part? Do you think that Saliba is not getting his foot in as determinedly as you should be at this level, or do you think it's a bit of naivety? Maybe he's lost a bit of focus. Maybe he's just tired.
Let's be honest. He's really inexperienced still. Inexperienced at this level. This is his first real, you know, season with Arsenal. He had such a good start to the season. Let's be honest. He's not been poor. He's been pretty steady still. He's definitely been the better of the two centre backs for me. But again, he's still young as well, so you've got to expect these sort of lapses in concentration. And it's just about how you kind of respond to that as well, though. But if you look at how Arsenal did respond to going behind 2-1, you thought it went on. They were sort of coasting for a little bit, and Villa looked fairly comfortable. It took Zinchenko's goal for them great to goal. Really kind of kick into gear. It was a very, very good goal. Lacks again from Villa. I just thought they weren't aware enough from that set piece. They were too slow closing him down as well. But it was a brilliant finish from Zinchenko. And once they scored that goal, you felt like there was only going to be one winner. And it's crazy how these goals are still scored as late as they are. But what a crazy... Was that karma as well, Mike, for Emi Martinez with all his time wasting?
It's really bad luck, isn't it? The way it ricochets off the bar onto the back of Martinez's head and into the goal. But yeah, I think sometimes for all the shithousery that he does, you do feel like it's going to come back to him at some point, don't you? Because you can't keep doing that and get away with it, really. Maybe. But it was very lucky on Arsenal's part that happened. But they were pushing for it, weren't they? They were taking lots of shots. They kept digging deep as well, right into the 98th minute when they scored a fourth goal as well. So fair play to them. And it's that kind of character, I think, they needed to show after losing to City, really, didn't they?
What do you think about Villa, like, in this game? Do you think it's kind of more of the same, probably, what we've seen the last couple of matches? I know they've kind of had a bit of a slump, haven't they? Let's be honest, they've come up against some good teams, haven't they, in the last run of fixtures. Obviously, they faced City and obviously this time Arsenal. And I think for me, there's definitely some real eye-catching players in this team. I think Kamara, I thought, had another really good game. I thought he played really well in midfield. I just feel like there's moments in these games where they're just too... They're not getting their foot on the ball and just keeping a hold of the ball. There's lack of a bit of inexperience in there where they just need to slow the pace of the game down because they can't continue to go end-to-end. It feels like they get caught out a little bit. I still feel like I want more from Leon Bailey. I don't think he's playing well enough. He had a couple of opportunities. He hit the bar, didn't he? One chance. But I still want more from him. There was a couple of opportunities where he got sort of into the box, and there was one moment where he kind of, you just thought, just cut in, just drop the shoulder, cut in, hit it on your left foot. And he tried to take it, go down the outside for some reason. And the Arsenal defenders read him like a book. And I just thought, oh, it's just...
Just be more clinical and direct. Yeah, I agree. I think, to be honest, Ollie Watkins is really impressing me. I thought Coutinho has been well when he's been called upon. You can see his class in bursts as well. And I think going forwards, they look brilliant. I think you can see Emery's plan clearly as well when they play a team like Arsenal. But I am surprised at how bad they've become defensively as well. I don't think Ezri Konsa looks as good this season. Tyrone Mings, I think, is probably past his best now. I don't think he'll get in the England squad anymore. I'd love to hear Miles' take on that as well. And we've got a lot of Villa fans subscribed as well. I'd love to hear their take on it. But defensively, I think they're just not that great.
Konsa was so lucky that they owed a guard chance.
Yeah. And what do you make of the final goal as well, when Martinez went up for the corner to try and get something from the game? And Unai Emery said afterwards he didn't tell him to do that, and he never would tell anybody to go up for a last minute goal from as a goalkeeper. That's surely going to kind of ruffle some feathers as well, because Martinez, his profile's massive now after the World Cup win. There's been talk of like the two of them not seeing eye to eye from their Arsenal days. They obviously both had a point to prove playing against Arsenal as well. Do you reckon there's going to be something behind the scenes there between the two after that? Because it didn't sound like a great reaction from Emery either, did it?
No, we spoke, didn't we, actually, not long ago about there being rumours that there'd been a bit of a rift between the pair. And, obviously it's not good, your manager coming out. Normally, I think a manager would kind of divert attention and probably just say, look, that's things happen in the heat of the moment in games. Players sort of, make these mistakes. But he's kind of gone back on, almost kind of gone against that, hasn't he, really? And just said, I didn't tell him to do that.
It's a strange one.
But Emery strikes me as that sort of character, though. I wouldn't want to cross him, to be fair, if I was a player. I feel like he's got that sort of mean streak, hasn't he, about him?
I get the feeling he wants to put people in their place who are probably getting above their station a little bit. And obviously, I mean, Martinez has had such a successful year or two that he's kind of got a right to feel confident, hasn't he? But it borders on cockiness sometimes. And if he's doing something that's not part of the manager's strategy by going up for a corner and then conceding a goal that finishes off any chance Villa had of getting back into the game, that's not great either. So I kind of get where he's coming from, but where it goes from here, I can't see Martinez being there beyond another season. I think he'll be snapped up by a massive team. And I think Villa would be right to cash in and find another alternative, to be fair.
It'd be a good time for them to cash in, to be fair, if he does go. I mean, we know he's got a bit of an ego, hasn't he? Yes. It wouldn't surprise me if, Emery wasn't against, cashing in and looking for somebody else. But they really do need to kind of earmark a goalkeeper, because I don't think they've got a goalkeeper at the club who can take his place and be a number one. Let's talk about that Coutinho goal, though.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Oh, how brilliantly made that was. Right, that was a brilliant team goal.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Going forward, they can do that.
Yeah. Do you think he's got a future at Villa? Do you think he's turning it around?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I don't know what kind of contract he's on, and I hope for Villa's sake that they didn't tie him to a huge one, because he is past his best, definitely. But he's got moments of magic, and I think that's worth him being in the squad, definitely. If you can bring Phil Coutinho off the bench when you're struggling for a goal, you can't create chances in the final third. He can conjure up stuff from distance, can't he, that many people can't. And yeah, he's a special player when he's good. But I've been impressed by Buendia as well when he's played. And it's just unfortunate they both kind of vie for that same number 10 position, isn't it? Because they're both great players.
Yeah, I think they try and sort of operate in the same areas sometimes. I think it's definitely, I think it's one that they probably will have to work on if they're both starting.
I put Buendia ahead of Coutinho, though. I think most Villa fans probably would as well.
Yeah. Yeah, he's done brilliant, hasn't he, since he came in at Villa.
Yeah. Back to the title race as well. I mean, obviously, City will be so frustrated to have not actually finished off Nottingham Forest in this game. They battered them, didn't they? Had 70%+ possession. Forest threw everything on the line to defend that draw, didn't they, and to get that point, and did really well. They were resolute in keeping that point. Pep Guardiola will be really, really frustrated, won't he, at losing those 2 points in this opportune moment to kind of keep the title race alive, won't he?
Mm-hmm. Oh, the manner of it as well, though. The manner of the game kind of flowed. Was it? I think they had 23 efforts on goal, City. 73% possession. And Forrest only had 4 shots. One of them was on target, which was the goal. What actually surprised me was obviously I didn't watch the game, but I heard about how good the goal was, but it was ridiculous that Forrest's goal, it's got to be up there for goal of the month if one of the goals of the team goals of the season.
Yeah.
I think all 11 players touched the ball as well.
It's something that you don't really associate with the team like Nottingham Forest as well. Like anyone that's been promoted from the Premier League, I mean, we've been proven wrong by every team this season that's come up, but you don't associate them with playing expansive football necessarily. But yeah, you're right. The goal was deserved. And although Forest probably didn't do enough to win the game because of the amount of chances City created, the way they dug deep and held firm to that point, I think is testament to how they've transformed this season. Because they're a different team. Like, their starting 11 doesn't look the same compared to what it was last time around. But they've got some fantastic players. Brennan Johnson looks an absolute dream going forward, doesn't he? He's such a threat for them against anyone. And he was against City as well whenever they tried to break. Really impressed with Morgan Gibbs-White as well. What a player he's been. What a signing. There's so many players, I think, that have stood up and been counted in a season where, to be honest, they could have pointed at the amount of transfers they've made and gone, well, that's why we're struggling. But they're not doing that. They're digging deep and finding a team that is the best team for them out of all the players they've signed. And there are some regulars that are coming to the fore for them. They've got quite a few established players in that starting 11 now. I've enjoyed watching them play this season, really. They're a breath of fresh air, aren't they, for a promoted team that were earmarked by everybody to go back down. That doesn't look the case now, does it?
No, they're giving themselves a massive chance, really, especially since, like I spoke to you earlier, and I said, I think the turning point was when they gave Steve Cooper that contract, renewed his contract, and said, this is the direction that we want to go in. We want you here at the club. At least then, you know, all the players are behind the manager. They, you know, I think in a way, when a manager gets a new contract as well, I think especially somebody who they like, I think it gives the players a boost as well. What you mentioned there as well about the players, I think, considering how many players are brought in and how he's managed to integrate them into the team and get them all settled and working in his system and their way of playing, I think is outstanding. I think in this game, their defence was, you know, brilliant to kind of contain City in the way that they did. Joe Worrell had a really good game, and Felipe, who's, you know, I don't think there was a lot of fans out there probably don't know a lot about him, but I thought he had a really good game too. Chris Wood,
yeah,
gets himself a goal.
He's a threat,
obviously. Yeah, I mean, they're doing so well, and they're 5 points clear of relegation now. Which is, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot, but what are they? Are they 13th?
13th, 14th, yeah. Well, they're above Leicester City, and we don't consider Leicester City to be in the relegation mix, but they're above on the table, well, level on games, and on merit, 100% on merit. They've played brilliantly, and yeah. I hope they survive, I really do. When they play at home as well, the crowd are fantastic for them as well. I love seeing games at the City Ground because it is a real old-fashioned Premier League ground, and the noise it generates there is intimidating for some teams. You know, it's a bit of a fortress for them this season, and
I think they've got a really good record at home this year, haven't they? I think that's
kind of what saved them. Yeah,
yeah, that's going to be a key for them, really. I think I would love them to stay up. I think, you know, it kind of just gives you get a lot of nostalgia, don't you? I think Forest being in the Premier League and kind of obviously moments and that we've had in the past, but. Yeah, there's a long way to go still. As we mentioned earlier, there's so many teams. It's so tight down there at the bottom. We'll see what happens. But they're doing, you know, they're making a really good go of it. If they could stay up, I'm sure that's all that Forest fans are asking of right now, just to stay up.
Yeah, I think that would be a successful season anyway. And I think they would have taken that at the start. But they're looking at the teams above them, I think, more than they are below them at the minute, because I think Aston Villa, who we've talked about, are only 3 points ahead in the table, which is, again, crazy, isn't it? They could aim for a mid-table finish if they really wanted to. But yeah, well played, Forrest, and well played, Steve Cooper. With other news then, Dave, I want to finish the pod just to talk quickly on club ownership. We're both Man United fans. Manchester United are up for sale, and it's still unclear whether anyone will match the valuation of £6 million that the £6 billion rather that the Glazers have put on the club. Who's the most likely? And it's a big question, but who do you want to see owning Manchester United going forward?
I don't think the answer exists, to be honest. I don't think. I think we've got to be realistic. With it appears what options are out there. There's a bit, seems like there's a bit of a divide, doesn't it? From what I've seen, polls, and I've seen actually quite a lot siding to the Qatari bid, mainly because of what they've come out with. They've been very clear with what they want to invest the money in. They want to invest the money within the men's and the women's team. They want to you know, obviously sort out the stadium. They either want to redevelop or build a new stadium.
Clearing the debt as well has been a big one.
Yeah, clearing the debt. Obviously, there not being any new debt invested, you know, thrown onto the club. There's been no, there's no borrowed money invested in the community. So they've outlined actually what they want to do very clearly, and you can see why it's an attractive prospect to some fans. But again, you know, there's the issue of the obviously everything that is non-football related. I don't want to go into it too much because, again, we could be here all night. And it's just, it is a really difficult question to answer that. I honestly don't know who I want to be at the club, but I just want the, whoever does buy the club, I want the best interests of the football club to be at the owner's heart and them to be looking to do the right things.
I mean, there's been
that's all United fans want. The club, look, the whole thing with the Qatari interest, United don't need that money. United can run itself. Look at the revenue that they turn over. They just want an owner that isn't taking money out of the club every year.
Yeah, I think that's the difference between us, PSG and Man City. They've come out of nowhere with this new wealth, and they've never had revenue of the level that Manchester United have and have had for 20, 30 years. So that is buying success, isn't it? Whereas you're right, United don't need that. They don't need somebody to bankroll them. They're self-sustainable. And that generates another question. How do fans want their club to be owned? Because back in the day, it used to be owned by a chairman who was like a local businessman. So similar kind of idea of being owned by a wealthy person, but it was someone tied to the city, therefore tied to the club. And you think about, is it Jack Walker was owner of Blackburn when they won the title? He 100% bankrolled them, you know? Nobody really batted an eyelid too much back then. And United, to an extent, have been lucky that the success they've had have made it sustainable now. They will keep getting money regardless of what happens to them. So who do you want to own your club? Somebody who, like you say, is not going to take. And we've had such a long spell of the Glazers taking that anything seems like an improvement now, doesn't it? Even the Sir Jim Ratcliffe consortium. There's questions about whether they're going to potentially saddle us with debt as well. But you feel like that Qatari bid seems a lot more tangibly positive now. Whereas I think 20 years ago, it would have felt like a ridiculous concept, wouldn't it?
I kind of agree with what Gary Neville came out and said, the horse is bolted on state ownership. I do agree with that. I think, obviously, we've let it happen with City. We've let it happen with Newcastle. It's been let happen with PSG. Because it's Man United, it has, you know, it's probably blown up a lot more than perhaps it would have done with another club, with, you know, with the size of the club. Again, it doesn't make it the right thing to do to let to still let these things happen. I think there needs to be some sort of policies put into place to ensure that clubs are bought, you know, in a more, that these issues are looked at more carefully.
Agreed. But ethically transparent, again, really. That's what you want more than anything.
have we really got the faith in UEFA or Premier League to do that with just how much money is involved in the game these days? And
yeah, well, that's the thing. The pool of buyers for a club like Manchester United, and Liverpool are finding that same trouble now, although we've just heard that they're not going to be sold after all, which is crazy. But the investment in clubs is got to be so huge that the pool of buyers is so small. So it's almost like you can't pick and choose who your owners are going to be. And it's a pipe dream, really, to think that somebody's going to come along and buy your club that is a fan of the club. Although the Qatari bid is headed by a Manchester United fan, isn't it? Allegedly. But that's not going to happen anymore. You know, I think the Bundesliga have got a great idea in having their clubs owned by 51% fans. But how do you do that on the scale of Manchester United? It would be amazing if they said to the fans, look, 51% of the club's up for grabs. We want all the fans to own it, buy a share of the club and help us go forward. But on that scale, is that even realistic? Can you do that?
Not really. At the end of the day, there's still going to have to be a figurehead, isn't there? There's going to have to be somebody at the top of the pyramid who still makes the decisions. And then you've got to then somehow put a plan into place where you elect somebody at the top of that pyramid and ensure it's the right person. There's always going to be somebody under scrutiny.
Yeah.
Because there's ultimately going to be decisions that aren't the right decisions. There's going to be decisions that are the right decisions. So either way, it's sort of a double-edged sword, isn't it? I think, again, what do you think about the Ratcliffe bid?
It's too many questions there. Too many unanswered questions. Too many concerns. You know, again, like you want your club to be run 100% with the club's best interests at heart, and I don't think that bid will 100% best interests of the club at heart.
Well, they're not clarified whether they're actually going to clear the debt, are they?
That's the big issue for me. Like, we didn't need to be saddled with debt by the Glazers, but they couldn't bought us without going into debt. So if you are going to come and own Manchester United, the only way fans will see it as a positive step is if there is no debt, because we didn't create the debt and we don't need it either. It's ridiculous. All we need is someone who can clear that. And if that's going to be Qatari owners, 100% honest, I don't feel comfortable with it. But that's the way football's going. And as a fan, you're so conflicted. I feel Newcastle fans must have felt the same when Mike Ashley was bought out, because you're saying goodbye to one terrible regime, but in comes the Saudi government pretty much investing in your club. How do you feel about that? Do you take success at that price? It's hard. It's a hard pill to swallow, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think what you're saying, really, I just don't know whether Ratcliffe's got enough money. I don't. If you're buying a new stadium,
yeah, it's billions.
Like, is that money going to be borrowed as well?
Well, it'll have to be, I think. He hasn't got anywhere near the wealth of the Qatari bid, that's for sure.
It's not just that; it's the training ground, the whole complex. Yeah. I think the women's needs are quite some heavy investment as well. So it's a lot. It's a lot to ask for, but it's what the club needs as well.
Yeah. Well, United are on the right tracks anyway in terms of success on the pitch. Happy with the way things are progressing under Erik ten Hag. I cannot believe the success he's had in such a short space of time, really. We've got a cup final to look forward to. We are almost quite a distance away from third and fourth place now in the Premier League table. And we've got potential to progress in the Europa League as well. We played really well against Barcelona, so that still looks positive. Things are looking good on the pitch for us, aren't they? It's been a while since we've been able to say that.
Yeah. There's an air of, I won't say invincibility, but you're kind of getting that sort of, not cockiness, but there's that assurance and there's that sort of belief in the team again. That even though actually going into this Leicester game, I did feel sort of like, oh, this could be, because it was in between the Barca game, the two Barcelona games, I thought, we looked a little bit tired, to be honest, in the first half, I thought. But just the way he's managing the squad, and he's actually, you know, rotating, bringing players on. He brought, obviously, Kobbie Mainoo, who came on in the second half for the last 10-15 minutes, who played really well. He's just a breath of fresh air, isn't he? The way he's doing things. Yeah. I can't speak highly of him enough. And I'm sure, I just think I echo the thoughts of every single Man United fan when they say he's the best thing to happen to this club in the last 10 years.
Yeah, that's...
Although there's that bar's probably low.
That's not saying much. Yeah, I was going to say. But I think compared to some of the absolute drivel and dross we've been served up on the pitch, especially from a footballing point of view, it's a breath of fresh air to see the philosophy never change, even though he keeps rotating the squad, tweaking things like position of players. He's not got a set plan A, and I think he's tactically so flexible in changing mid-game. And we've seen that on most games, haven't we, in the last few weeks, that he's not afraid to kind of change things when it's not working quite drastically. Breath of fresh air. And yeah, he's definitely, I think, caught the bug for Manchester United now. I think he loves the club and what it stands for. So whether he'll feel comfortable with the new owners, if that ever does go through, we'll see. But I hope he's still given the sort of autonomy he's got now, whoever's in charge, don't you?
Oh, you can't see him going anywhere, can you? I know he came out and said, I hope, you know, that I can remain here, and surely it's out of the question.
But the thing is, he doesn't want to buy success necessarily either. I think he prides himself on, you know, still finding talent, like Tyrell Malacia as well. You know, he could have signed an amazing left back who was proven, but no, he's gone for Malacia because he's seen potential in him. But yeah, he's also gone and signed Casemiro. So he knows about the blend. He's bringing Garnacho through, and he knows what United stand for, I think, as well. And that's the Ajax side of him coming through. And it fits really well with our philosophy. And if that has to change because the hierarchy changes to a point where they want more control, that would concern me. So again, for new owners, please don't tinker with things as they are. Eric knows what he's doing. We all trust in him. And yeah, fingers crossed for a successful season, hopefully.
Yeah, I fully agree.
That's it for this week's pod. Thank you for listening to us on whatever audio platform you are tuning into us from. We are obviously on YouTube as well. So please, if you can, give us some support on there, because everything we record for audio channels is actually recorded in video format as well. So YouTube channel is where to find that. Hit subscribe if you can, and help support our growth as we go forward. But until next week, Dave, thanks again for your time, mate. Speak to you soon.
No problem. See you.